it makes me feel better about myself and keeps me away from the sleeping pills. The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 414, recorded on February 22nd, 2016. And welcome to the 414th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 247th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falcon.
I am TJ Denzer.
And I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, we have a lot of stuff to talk about. And the thing is that right now we have a news situation going on as we talk. And that is both Xbox Live and PSN being down. And I've been doing a little investigating, and a hacker group is claiming, they're doing it. And here's the thing, is that when I try to use anything with my Xbox Online, it'll tell me, oh, you can't play your DVD, you can't play your Blu-ray player, can't do YouTube, can't do this, can't do any of your apps, can't do any of your games that aren't on a disc. So what you're forced to do is you're forced to get yourself off Xbox Live so you can use your DVD, Blu-ray player. However, you cannot play any of your digital content because they cannot be confirmed online. And I'm thinking, yeah, Microsoft, this is what would have happened if all your games had to be online only.
Exactly.
You know, people can understand when you're under an attack like this. I mean, PSN is undergoing the same attack for the past few days. And I always wanted them to catch these guys, take a ball peen hammer, smash their knuckles, and then put them in a prison where they have no access to any computers for the next few years.
Sounds good to me.
Because I know it sounds incredibly violent and right-wing and awful, but, you know, there's no purpose to this. There's zero purpose to this.
It's all...
They just want to see the world burn.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
I'd like to see their hair burn now. I'm going to tell you something. You know, if you strap these guys to a wall, and you put some baseball bats on a table, put some gamers in that room, and said, okay, here are the hackers who have been ruining your online experience. We're going to close the door now, leave you these bats and these guys tied up, and you can do whatever you want. I guarantee they would not have faces left.
Yeah.
Like, well, I said, it sounds violent, but, you know, what's it called? This sort of stuff just burns my toast.
Mm-hmm. Grinding gears.
I mean, and here, Microsoft. Now, I can understand Xbox Live being down and being, you know, attacked for whatever reason, because that happens. But don't tie everything to online. Especially, you know, the online content, you know, let me have my digital stuff and let me play it without having to have an online access. The only thing online should be for is for me to play on Xbox Live. The only people who should be pissed off right now are people playing multiplayer. That's on YouTube and whatever, you know. I should be able to play, say, The Walking Dead without having to be online.
See, and that's the way that PSN is that you download, even with digital content, you download it to a hard drive and you have it on there and you can access it regardless. Mm-hmm. So,
but the problem with PSN is that it's even more of a hacker paradise than Xbox Live is, and Sony still hasn't quite learned how to deal with it. And I think that's the main reason why Nintendo still doesn't know how to do internet, because they see this and they say, we don't want anything to do with this. But it's then again, Nintendo's thing. Problem is that they're releasing shit.
It's a ridiculous thing, and these groups claim that we're just altruistic and we're trying to prove to you that you need to upgrade your security. No, it's that you're mostly looking for attention. That's all there is to it.
They want to be dicks, and they're showing how, you know, what skill they are at their hacker abilities.
Just make it a federal crime. I mean, that's all you need to do. This is an interstate crime, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But we're still dated, and we don't know what we're doing with the internet. You know, we still that goes back to our conversation before we started the podcast about I forgot the name of it. That four letter word, digital rights management. I forgot the name of it, DMCA, right? And also Content ID and all that stuff. We still don't know how to regulate it. And the thing is that we still haven't You see, here's the thing. At some point, we're going to have to consider the internet a public utility.
Mm-hmm. It's literally going to take somebody having the authority to go in and write an entire new set of rules that other people will then agree
upon. We don't like to write our own rules. But here's the other problem is that every country has their own rules, which is why Valve was able to get away with what it was doing because they decided they were going to follow the laws of Luxembourg. We're going to follow Luxembourg's law. And the British and French government said, no, you're not. We're going to sue your butt because you have to be liable for some of the stuff that happens on your service, and you can't just go to Luxembourg, you know. Like I said, at some point, they're going to have to consider internet a public utility.
Right.
Because it's gotten to that point. I mean, there was a time in which you could say, yeah, energy was a private utility, and you could say that the phone was a private utility. Not anymore. Can't say hot water is a private utility either.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that's we're trying to make our prisons a private utility, which isn't working. So, we just went into the political podcast there. Yeah. Anyways, what have you been playing?
I don't know if I should go with TJ, but I'm playing the same thing, Minecraft and Civ, and I don't feel the need to play a new game every week. You know, sometimes just playing the standby classics that I'm enjoying is just fine with me.
Okay. How about you, TJ?
Well, the funny thing about doing reviews is that I play something weird and new every week, so... Let's get into
That's
it.
Fine.
I'm playing
Well, we can't let this be too boring.
It just feels like an assignment if I have to make sure I play something new each time. It's like, I just want to play what makes me happy.
See, but that's the wonderful thing about doing freelance work is that people are paying me to do it, so I don't, like... I'm not going out on a limb by doing it.
Okay, I'm back. So, what were you saying?
So, this week, for review, I was playing a game called Superhot. And Superhot... Let me find
Isn't
out.
That the name of a movie starring Jonah Hill?
Not
back
quite.
Back in 1990... Oh, Superbad.
Well, let's see. Who's this done by? It's done by Piotr. I don't know how to say it. P-I-O-T-R. How do you say that? Peter?
I don't know. Piotr.
Piotr Kosmala. And the game is a shooter in which time and space do not move until you move. So basically, it's sort of a puzzle game in a way. Where you see everyone in place and you figure out the best way how to dispatch them and then move to see everything happen. It's kind of amazing in a way, like, because when you get to the end of a level, it takes everything that you did in that level and plays it in real time, and it makes you feel like a Jason Bourne badass.
Okay.
So is it like, I think I know what you're, the kind of thing, game mechanic you're talking about where you're moving and they're moving at the same time and everything's kind of in sync. It's almost quasi turn-based in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That
sounds cool.
It's very interesting. And, like, at first I thought it was like, well, this is just going to be like a game built around an entire... It's basically just a mechanic that's called a game. And I thought that's all it was going to be, but it's actually turning out to be a little bit more deeper than that. And I'm really enjoying it. As far as, like, real games I've been playing...
Wait. Stop. Don't do that. Because we've had... People always say that, you know, like, Gone Home isn't a real game.
Oh.
You know, don't say that. Just say it's an indie game that you played.
Okay. I'll put it this way. Mainstream games I've been playing is Street Fighter V. I'm on board the Street Fighter V train.
Uh-oh.
And we'll open that can of worms later, but... Uh-huh. It's good, but I also hate it.
Yeah, well, without getting too far into it, it's just they did Street Fighter IV and added networking. But anyways, so what? I finished XCOM 2. I beat the game, and this isn't much of a spoiler. I'm gonna get vague about this, but not vague as well. Now, it's not a spoiler for anybody who's actually played the original XCOM games. And basically, the sequel hook is XCOM Terror from the Deep. You know, so it looks like the next XCOM game will be Terror from the Deep.
And so, Cthulhu.
What?
So, Cthulhu.
No, but you do have the deep, those deep creatures coming out from... Yeah. So, basically, what's going on is that the aliens that you're fighting in XCOM 2 are trying to... spoiler, but, you know, it's a strategy game. I don't think people care because they don't hear the exact dialogue, but... So, the aliens are actually trying to use humanity's DNA and all that stuff to strengthen the elders so that they can beat back these creatures that are living in, deep in the underwater of the Earth. They don't specifically say that, but the gameplay communicates it, you know. So basically it's sort of like in Half-Life, if you remember, you killed Nihilanth, that big alien energy fetus, and he kept on telling you, what the hell are you doing? Because if you kill me, the Combine are going to come. And soon enough, in Half-Life 2, the Combine come. You know, and they take over the world. So, you know what really irritates me is that I really enjoyed Race X from Half-Life Opposing Force, and they never appeared again. You know? These alien soldiers, who are more soldiers than the Vortigaunts and all that thing, these right. What's it called, with the bugs for guns, you know, they never appear again, you know. Actually, you know what's coming out this week is a new game. It's an unofficial sequel to Half-Life, and it brings back Adrian Shepard.
Interesting. What's that called?
I was about to say Trespasser, but that's wrong. the name of the game is Prospect.
Huh. I'll have to check that out. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it takes place during Half-Life 2 as well. So it's sort of like was it Blue Force? No. Blue Shift. It was Blue Shift. Remember Blue Shift? Also an Opposing Force. Everything was taking place during Half-Life. So, you know, you occasionally saw glimpses of Gordon Freeman and all that stuff. As a matter of fact, in Opposing Force, you could create a temporal paradox by following Freeman into Zen.
Mm-hmm.
And the game stops saying, no, you can't do that. You just created a temporal paradox. You could also kill Gordon Freeman, but again, temporal paradox.
Right.
You get to see Adrian Shepard again, even though it's not canon. Although, you know, it could easily be made canon if... Because here's the thing is that Valve is very good about people making mods. I mean, they you know, with Black Mesa and all that stuff. And this could be an unofficial canon thing, you know, until right. They say it isn't.
Anything can be written. It only depends on the company itself to say whether.
Yeah, like Disney saying all the extended universe Star Wars stuff no longer counts.
It doesn't count until they. Say
I don't it care.
Counts.
It still counts. Not unless they burn all the books, it still counts, Jonah. It's just the alternate universe.
Well, you know, actually, there's been videos about how The Force Awakens is a shot-for-shot remake of.
It's
Star
really
Wars.
Not because the name's not Luke, it's Rey.
Oh, the names are not Luke. Yeah, and it's not Tatooine. It's Jakku.
Yeah,
even though you have the same hive you have the same kind of town as Mos Eisley, you have the same desert, you have the same hive of villain scum and villainy. You have all that, you know.
Well, I
yeah,
heard
but it's,
that the Earth has more than one desert. Is that true?
No, it's a desert
Sahara
planet.
Desert,
it's a desert planet.
Desert.
The entire planet is a
all
desert.
These different deserts. Maybe there's multiple desert planets out there.
And
I don't know.
The Starkiller isn't the Death Star. It's just it's this Death Star, but bigger.
Yeah, that was obnoxious, but still, it's not a remake. Okay. Because
the mentor gets killed by the bad guy in front of our hero who yells no.
Actually in the movie, and it's not a remake. All right?
Oh yeah, well how about the mentor?
Old themes is fine, but it's not a remake.
The mentor gets killed in front of the hero who screams no.
Oh my god, that is like Soul Journey 101. I mean, like freaking Gandalf, Merlin. I mean, go on.
No. Here's the thing. That's something that
same thing.
That's something that Peter Jackson added. That's not something that Tolkien wrote. Tolkien never wrote anybody going, no!
I wasn't even talking about the movies. He still goes down with Balrog and comes back later. But the whole point is the mentor dying in, or supposedly dying in front of the hero.
The thing is that all these beats are the trope. Same. Oh boy, I feel like I'm trying to tell. You know, back in '99, I tried telling Star Wars fans that The Phantom Menace was a piece of junk, and they wouldn't listen to me until 5 years later.
No, they were pretty quick to hate that movie.
They hated Jar Jar Binks. They thought everything else was fine. And then they had to learn to hate Qui-Gon Jinn.
I don't hate Qui-Gon. I'm not really thrilled with him, but I don't
stupid.
Hate him.
He's stupid beyond belief. How many people do you know would exit a vessel in an occupied city in broad daylight in full view of everybody? But then again, the enemies are even stupider. So, why in the world would you... See, the Trade Federation is inside the city. They're behind high walls. So what is the first thing they do? They remove that, and they decide to go outside, which is what you don't do when you have a fortified position. They leave their fortified position to, and by the way, if there's no army with the Naboo, then why does the queen have weapons in her chair? It's just... Like I said, here's the thing. The trilogy were just first drafts that never got another edit because the person who wrote it was also the executive producer, was a multi-billionaire. Mm-hmm. And there was no one to say no. You know? And, you know... Anyways, we're not here to talk about the trilogy. We're here to talk about other heinous... sequels. But before we talk about heinous sequels... TJ, why don't you take the first item?
Iranian state television mistakes Medal of Honor footage for reality, from Game Watcher. An Iranian television report showing an alleged Hezbollah sniper shooting six ISIS soldiers that has circulated around the Middle East was proven fake by French media. It was footage taken from a Let's Play video of 2010's Medal of Honor. The incredible footage featured, according to the Iranian report, six Daesh combatants are killed in 2 minutes by a Hezbollah sniper. Daesh is the Arabic name
for Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant,
right?
Which we call ISIS.
Which Western countries have been calling ISIS? Yes. French news outlet France 24 recognized the action as streamed video from Medal of Honor, probably shot on a cell phone of action on a TV screen or monitor. For one, killings in the video were accompanied by a blurry pop-up, which was the icon players received when they scored a headshot. This was almost certainly deliberate on the Iranian state television's part, because the moments at which there were pop-ups from the players' friends in the upper right-hand part of the screen, the video was zoomed away from it.
Yeah, well, you know, when you're on Xbox Live, your friends pop on, and you see this, so, you know, you have, oh, your friend has just logged on, you know.
Right.
The camera moved to the lower, you know, moved away from that. And just to cut this quickly, also, you had the bottom of a television screen in the video.
Right.
This was very hilarious.
Yeah, the Let's Play video was posted back in 2012, 2 years after Medal of Honor was released. The game was a mediocre effort by Electronic Arts, but no matter how obscure and dated the source is, plagiary of that scale will be outed on the internet.
Yeah, the Arma 2 gameplay that was done by British TV, ITV, that at least looked a little... because it looked more... This was just extremely fuzzy. And I'm thinking, you know, this this Hezbollah sniper is getting achievements. You know, he's getting these headshot points. I wonder what he's spending the points on. Do they pop in front of him and say, "Oh, he got a headshot"?
Right. And I remember, like, even when the Medal of Honor game came out, like when they were getting ready to put that out, that was a cause of concern, because that was one of the first mainstream video games that took the idea of an FPS to the Middle East and the Desert Storm conflicts and all that.
Okay, I mean,
and they talked about it. They were like, "What if this causes PTSD in people that are still alive that have been in that conflict?" And B, what if other people use this as a means for propaganda?
Propaganda is what I was thinking they were trying to do. But
and there's no way this is state television. This isn't an independent there's no way they didn't know that this was fake. They must have thought they could prove to other people that it was fake. Because, like I said, it had a television screen. Was the Iranian? Was the Hezbollah sniper watching TV while? Was he on TV while watching? It just makes no sense.
I don't know what the QA or editing departments over in Iranian state TV are, but I imagine they don't have too much of a budget.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, if you visit that Let's Play, it's gotten a lot more hits, and there's a lot of people saying, "How does it feel to be famous?"
Yeah, that helped him, all right.
Yeah.
Or her.
Hey, no, it was him. So I'm. You know, the good thing is that whoever shot the Let's Play is getting more Google. What's called some money from Google,
right?
For getting hits. Maybe I should do that. Maybe I should make a video in which. No, I'll probably get arrested. Yeah. Anyways, okay. It's up now. It's you, Scott.
Okay. Street Fighter V arcade mode being considered from Shaq News. Street Fighter V launched last week with longtime fans of the series feeling like it was more of an early access game than a full launch. While we're fine with its initial lineup of fighters, we wish there were more game modes, especially a more traditional arcade mode. Capcom is planning on adding more content to Street Fighter V in March, but one that has yet to be confirmed is arcade mode. According to a statement submitted to Forbes, Capcom is looking into adding an arcade mode and will have more information to share soon. The company is also planning on adding difficulty sliders to its existing story mode. The arcade mode has been a staple of the Street Fighter series. So wouldn't they
TJ, how much does Street Fighter V cost?
It costs $60, $59.99.
God. Now, see, arcade mode, that's when you're fighting your other players against each other?
Fighting against the AI, and here's the thing, there is no AI.
So what's the difference
story mode is very limited AI. As a matter of fact, people could beat it each story in 10 minutes.
The only way that you get AI fighting in Street Fighter V is if you go to survival mode, which is where you go against a set number of opponents that never change order, by the way.
And there's only one round. It's not the best of three. It's simply one round.
Right. And there's an easy, medium, hard, and hell mode in which the opponents just basically go from easy mode to just block everything you do, which is fine. That's fine, except for the fact that that's not a freaking arcade mode.
Yeah, and it only takes you at most an hour and a half to finish the quote-unquote story mode, which, and by the way, has the worst graphics and the worst voice acting. We're talking about typing of the dead level of voice acting.
I was playing that game, and my wife was watching me play, and she said she made the most perfect observation I've ever heard about that game. She said, "This has the complexity of a porno," and that is exactly right.
Oh yeah. Well, speaking of which, I mean, the characters are definitely soft porn, especially the Brazilian fighter.
Of course. Why wouldn't they be?
I mean, the Brazilian fighter—they make no bones about it. They just shove her tits right in your face.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and also, I forgot her name, but she has the thong, the G-string, right up her ass. And then you have I don't know if they kept it in, I don't know if they edited it out, but she also slaps her ass and all that stuff. But in stark contrast is what Microsoft is doing with Killer Instinct. And Killer Instinct is free to play. And you just buy characters that you want. That's it. Boom. Or you can buy an entire season. And they're on their third season. Wow. And the thing is that Street Fighter V is a free to play game that you're paying $60 for.
Absolutely. And you're telling me,
and it's early access. It's definitely Steam early access without actually being early access.
And you're telling me that arcade mode is being considered, not set in stone, is maybe going to happen? That's absurd. That's freaking ridiculous.
Well, here's my answer to here's the solution. My solution to your problem. You know, there's a Street Fighter 4, right?
Right.
Play Street Fighter 4. They already have, what's the last edition? The Street Fighter 4 Ultra HD Turbo Remax or whatever. Because they released the same game. Well, not really the same game. See, here's the thing. Capcom has really had to justify making multiple iterations of each level of Street Fighter. The Street Fighter 4, Street Fighter 4 Alpha, Street Fighter 4 Turbo, whatever. And one of the things that I've spoken to Street Fighter fans is that each of the Street Fighters, 1, 2, 3, and 4, they all felt different. They all felt completely different from one another.
Right.
Street 5 does not feel different from 4. It feels like a modded 4. Granted, from what I understand, the gameplay is really, really good.
It is.
Unfortunately, there's another problem with Street Fighter V, which we're not discussing in this article, and that it has had a miserable online launch.
Yeah, that's an understatement. It is possibly... You know what? We all talked about how bad it was when... what was it? I'm drawing a blank. I actually am drawing a blank on a game that's been worse on online launch than Street Fighter V. I know there's been some... That is definitely
SimCity wasn't as bad. I know what you're talking about. Well, Killzone has always had miserable online launches. It wasn't MAG. Anyways, we'll it's irrelevant right now. But and also the for whatever reason MLB the Show, whenever they release a baseball game, the online is always terrible. Anyways, that's getting away from the point. And the thing is that if you're a Street Fighter V fan, you know, you've already bought the game. You didn't hang back for reviews. And not to mention all the reviews that came out were glowing at first. If you notice, you know.
Right.
And it wasn't until afterwards that you had I forgot the name, was it Geek Ranks? They gave it a 1.5 out of 5 and all of that. And the thing is that if you were a site that was wise, you would have released an in process review, which meant, yeah, we have the finished product, and this is what we think so far, right? Because with online games and MMOs, I don't think you could ever do a first day review,
right?
You know, because before that, you're playing the beta. Either you're playing the beta or you're playing with devs, and that's not really a true view of the game. You know, you have to see it out in the wild if it's something that stresses online, because that always changes.
Right. And don't get me wrong, Street Fighter V, when you're in the game, when you're in a fight, it's wonderful. It's amazing. They did a lot of work on, like, the way that the fights work and how everyone is balanced, and it's pretty cool the way they did, like, their new setups and systems. But when the online component isn't working for 24 hours, and then a few days later, the system is down for server maintenance.
Well, yeah, that's what Sony said, but it's been up and down the past 3 days, and I have a feeling that this hacker group is claiming they got them too. So yeah, I don't think it's server maintenance that Sony's been dealing with.
No, because they planned on it for a while. Like if you jumped on,
well, they may have planned it, but you know what? That's not what this hacker group is claiming.
Right. In the last 24 hours, Street Fighter, they've been putting up a note that said the system will be down, but you might be right on that hacker group targeting them. I mean, why wouldn't they? It's a huge game, and they did not follow through on anything they promised.
You know, the thing is that Microsoft, at least, you know, one little neat thing is that if you go to their Xbox Live status, they say everything, you know, things are compromised, all that stuff. They also allow you to let them text you. When Xbox Live is up, which is kind of neat when you think about it, because you know, you can go out and then you get a text. Oh, by the way, Xbox Live is up, and then you can tell your friends. Oh, guess what? I'm going home because Xbox Live is up again. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to sit at home waiting, or just be out and wondering, is my live up yet? Although you have to, you know, I'm not going to talk like that because there's a problem with that. Like you really have to get to online. You know, like you're that desperate. I don't know.
I'll say this. If you don't love online play, even when Street Fighter V is up and running and perfect, if you don't love online play, don't like competing with others, don't get Street Fighter V. Yeah. It's not made for single player.
You know, when I first got Street Fighter IV, it was for the PC. And when I first logged in, it's like it automatically puts you in online lobby. And I was I had to back out of a message. Wait, what's going on here? I don't want to play anybody. I just want to play against the computer.
Right, and I totally get that. I'm into story modes and arcade modes and all that jazz.
I don't play Street Fighter 4 because there are too many experts out there, and I'm not an expert. And right. When you play an expert, you might as well just not even touch your joystick or buttons because they're going to wipe you out in a millisecond.
It's like, I know that feeling.
It's like being, you know, when you were at the arcade cabinet, you had your quarter on the cabinet, you stepped up to play. 5 minutes later, you were walking away from the machine, defeated.
Yep.
See, and I'm the guy that at least lasts for maybe $1.50 before some guy knocks me out.
Oh, okay.
And even I have to say, this is crap for anyone who wants to play this just to play the game.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I don't think it should if they had said it was free to play and in early access, I think the complaints would be a lot less. You know,
I feel like the whole early access is really gotten abused.
But here, the thing is this. But the problem here, Scott, is that this isn't early access. They're claiming this is a launch. They don't have that excuse of it being early access.
Right.
That's the problem.
Right. It just feels like. Well, a lot of bullshit, like you guys are saying, and this is just really crappy coming from a long-standing franchise and a company that's has made good games in the past, and I don't know why they wouldn't have arcade mode, and it just none of it makes sense.
Well, the other thing is that a lot of Street Fighter fans I've been hearing have said they would have rather that Capcom waited a month or two if it wasn't going to be finished.
Yeah.
The worst thing about Capcom is that we all should have seen this coming. We all should have seen this coming because it's Capcom in a Street Fighter game. What do they do with these games?
I don't know about that. I mean, Capcom is one of the major companies that's really close with its fans because you have Capcom Unity. If you play any games by Capcom, if you're if you're followers, especially if you're Street Fighter, you're on Capcom Unity a lot. You know, and I forgot the name. There was one guy. Was employed by them for a long while. Everybody got Christian something that people really liked because he was, and made, Capcom really friendly towards gamers. The problem is that they recently have been doing some strange stuff. Like they had last year that entire controversy of having all the DLC already on the disc that you had to unlock, like Pac-Man.
Yeah. And there was that same thing with Street Fighter and Tekken.
Street Fighter, Street Fighter X Tekken. Has Tekken X Street Fighter ever come out?
No, not yet.
I'll consign that to Vaporware because that's several years that it should have. But then that you can blame on Konami. Oh wait, is it Konami or SNK that does Tekken?
That's Konami.
Konami, yeah. I would like to see more intercompany crossovers, by the way, not just with like Master Chief with Adam Jensen from Deus Ex or something like that.
That's not Konami. I made a mistake. That's Namco Bandai.
Oh, right. One thing is that the Arbiter is going to be a character in Killer Instinct.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. So there's a little minor. Oh, by the way, speaking of Rare, did you notice that Conker Jr. has been making an appearance in a lot of ways, which sort of makes me think there's something coming with Conker in it.
Yeah, they've been playing around with teases of that for a while.
I mean, before when it was part of when it was a part of Project Spark, but recently, the past few weeks, there's something going on with Conker. So we'll see about that. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Experimental 5D storage could store 360 terabytes of games for 13.8 billion years, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. You know how you had the game you had to keep coming back to no matter how much you played it already? Well, thanks to a new data storage technology called 5D, you'll be able to store it on a tiny piece of nanostructured glass and load it up again a long, long time from now, say 13.8 billion years. Just a little thing about that. The universe is 13.8 billion years old, give or take a few million, 100 million years. So, yeah. Anyways, researchers at the University of Southampton have developed that technique, which involves femtosecond, that's quadrillionth of a second, laser writing. The file is written on three layers of dots separated by 5 microns, which is a millionth of a meter. The nanostructured glass the data is written on has 360 terabyte capacity and thermal stability of over 1,000 degrees Celsius. At temperatures below 190 degrees, the data will last for at least 13.8 billion years. The glass changes the way light passes through it, and the different polarizations can be read by an optical microscope and a polarizer, according to the university. It's coined as the Superman memory crystal, as the glass memory has been compared to the memory crystals used in the Superman films. The data is recorded by self-assembled nanostructures created in fused quartz. The information encoding is realized in five dimensions, the size and orientation in addition to the three-dimensional position of these nanostructures. And also I'm getting this vision of those, you know those little glass squares that they have in Star Trek The Next Generation?
Yeah,
that they plug into
Star
stuff.
Trek data chips.
Yeah, so basically that's what it is. Except our data chips are exceeding what theirs can do.
Yeah, we could probably put all of the games ever created so far on one of those 360 terabytes and still have lots of room.
The problem is it's not read-write, so it's pointless. But actually, now that I think about
it, you can download the game that you want to some other medium that is writable and play your save game there, if that's what you mean.
But there's something else that we're not considering, and that is, guess what you could imprint on something that size?
The human brain?
Right.
Right.
So you could actually do real-life brain uploading.
Yeah.
And basically what you do is you take scans, you know, micro, you know, extremely thin scans. Again, the same, you know, like a millionth of like 1 micron, and you do that scan, and then you basically put it on the chip,
mm-hmm.
and have a 3D model on the chip, and then see what happens. So yeah, beware, you know, Cortana in Windows 10 may become Cortana herself. But
well, this,
you know. I just know that people are going to fill up those things anyway, because every time you have new storage, have you noticed that when you get new storage, you say, oh, we'll never run out of space, and then I'm run out of space. How'd you make up 360 terabytes of memory already? I collect a lot of porn.
Will this thing last if the sun explodes? Because that's definitely going to happen some point in that 13.8 billion
years.
Well,
we'll be dead long before that, just so you know.
Or we have left the galaxy, maybe. I mean, let's never be so pessimistic. You know, we could actually leave the galaxy and go spacefaring, go to other...
Well, yeah, I mean, just the thing is that the sun is getting hotter and hotter and hotter. In a billion years, life will be impossible on the Earth, no matter if it turns into a red giant or not. Long before it turns into a red giant, it'll be uninhabitable.
A quarter of that.
What?
We probably could have left the planet by then.
Well, we could leave the planet, but there's too much squabbling. Although... they have, they do have a new drive. There are several new drives. One of them, they don't know how it works. It shouldn't work, but it works. And that's the microwave drive. They call it the ion drive. No, not the ion drive. Oh, shoot. No, it's something else. But the ion drive is one, way, but it's like you go, after a couple of minutes, you're going 60 miles an hour, but it keeps on going faster and faster and faster and faster. The EM drive, it's called, and basically what it does is it bounces around microwaves, which creates a distortion in space within that drive, which repels the ship. And the thing about that is that to do that, you require almost nothing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Almost nothing, which makes it extremely light. It's called the Kané drive. That's right. It's called the EM drive. It's also called the Kané drive. And if it works, it could actually bring us to Mars in a couple of weeks. Although, see, the problem with all that is that you still need a shielding from cosmics, and there's only one way we know that really stops cosmics, and that's water.
Mm-hmm.
A meter of it's either a foot or a meter of water that actually diffracts cosmics from hitting you. So somehow we're going to have a ship that has water surrounding it, which actually might work, actually, if it's just a one-way trip. You know, I mean, let me put it this way. The Mars shit is complete and utter bullshit. It makes as much sense as Mission to Mars. One good solar ray and Matt Damon's character is dead.
Yeah, but it's still a fun movie, and that's what matters.
I guess.
Way better than Armageddon.
I don't like movies that pretend to be smart and aren't. You know? So, well, here let's just get the series first, and then we'll talk about Mars.
Did you ever see Idiocracy?
Yes, I did. Idiocracy. Yes, that's by Mike Judge, I forgot who stars in it.
That's,
was it Mike Judge who stars
that's,
in it?
That's...
No. But it's by Mike Judge, who people know for better for King of the Hill and Beavis and Butthead. And basically, they posit the fact that really intelligent people don't like to have sex, so they have fewer kids, while really stupid people keep on having sex.
Right.
So people get stupider and stupider and stupider. So far, the most popular show in the United States is Ow, My Balls.
Yeah, and there's a certain part of that where they're talking about during the decline of humanity, the scientists could have stopped it, but they were too busy inventing new ways to keep boners longer. And that's how I kind of feel about this.
They're ShamWows. I mean, Bill Maher covered that, like ShamWows and Flobies and, you know,
and
stuff
like that.
That's
how I feel about this technology, is that the sky's the limit on it, and there are certainly people that will develop it, but will they get the funding?
I mean, NASA's getting the funding, you know. And here's the other thing: is that private enterprise is also doing most of the space launches. It's profitable out there, so you know there's untold resources if you can get them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean that's exactly what the moon was about, in which you're mining the dark side of the moon for H3, you know, for energy. And the other thing is that we're getting closer and closer to cold fusion. Which, by the way, for those who don't know, you see, fusion usually requires a couple thousands of degrees, which is where hydrogen bombs come from. Fusion bombs, you know. Cold fusion will allow you to have fusion, but at a more manageable temperature. And we're getting closer to that, too. I mean, we had the hoaxes like a decade ago about cold fusion, but now we're actually getting close to it. How do we get here from a video game roundtable, by the way?
I have no idea.
So, yeah.
Science cast.
We're going to move on to the next item.
All right. Ubisoft boasts about the Division Beta's huge numbers from Game Watcher. The Division Open Beta wrapped up this weekend, and it sounds like Ubisoft is quite proud of the results. Ubi wasn't specific about whether these numbers reflected just the recent Open Beta or encompassed both it and earlier closed beta tests. But it's probably safe to assume the latter. 6.4 million players jumped on the beta bandwagon, spending an average of 4 hours and 52 minutes with the game. Those sound like pretty solid beta numbers to me. A third of that playtime was spent in the Dark Zone, the Division's PvP environment, which saw 2.5 million players turn on their fellow operatives. Ubisoft is calling it the biggest beta ever for a new IP on current generation platforms.
That's not exactly a wide, that's not exactly a big, you know, sample size there.
Right. Margus Jansen, the game's creative director, had this to say: "We're looking forward to everyone getting their hands on the full game when the Division is released on March 8th. That release will be hitting PS4, Xbox One, and, of course, the mighty personal computer."
Unfortunately, the mighty personal computer version of that had rampant cheating and hacking, because Ubisoft were brilliant in that they had client-side servers, which is just begging for people to abuse the game.
Yeah.
But I will say this. The Division is shaping up to be everything that Destiny was supposed to be.
I'll say this. Ubisoft, despite the client-side servers, has been doing a good job this year. I applaud them for what they've been doing with the Tom Clancy games and with Assassin's Creed.
How about
and
Hitman?
Everything. Hitman?
Well, remember Hitman, Ubisoft decided they were going to release the first two chapters, the prologue and the first chapter, then go episodic and release a chapter every month.
I'm not against that, as long as they budget the cost accordingly.
Yeah. They have some interesting things with Hitman, too. They're adding some modes that were popular in Hitman. Was it Hitman Absolution?
Yeah.
In which you did a murder, you did an assassination in a very special way, then you send it out to all your friends and say, here, beat this time doing these exact things to get this exact assassination. You know, stuff like that. I'm looking forward to Division. I'm just not going to play it on PC. Because
right.
I just know there's going to be trouble there.
Mm-hmm.
It's harder to hack consoles, because A, hackers don't really give a crap about consoles when it comes to multiplayer, and B, the servers are almost always not client-side. Although I will say, I know the PS3, everything was client-side, which is why the PS3 got hacked left and right. especially since they decided to include Linux on the PlayStation 3. Yeah, that's not going to attract hackers at all.
Right.
Having client-side Linux on your console.
You mentioned something, and I thought it was extremely apropos. You mentioned that The Division is kind of sort of everything that Bungie wanted.
Yeah, here's the thing, is that from what I understand from people, The Division has a crap ton of endgame content. Crap ton of endgame content. Unlike Destiny.
Yeah, Destiny.
Because if you read between the lines during Destiny's development, Activision was chopping off things left and right. A lot of the things that reporters saw, you know, journalists saw when they went to Bungie was not in the final game.
Mm-hmm.
They were sliced off.
And that's the thing, is that outside of just, like, getting together with your friends, Destiny was boring.
Yeah. I mean, if the one thing about any game of its ilk is that you really have to have a sweet loot drop, and it has to feel meaningful. And it did not feel meaningful in Destiny at all.
Not at all.
You know, when you play World of Warcraft, the loot drops are sweet. When you play Diablo, the loot drops are sweet. When you play any good game, you know, that has that roguelike or MMO thing, you better have sweet loot drops that people value. And in Destiny, I was not feeling it.
Or just have something that's fun to do that isn't always the same thing for 40 hours.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about it, it's unfair for me to talk about The Division because it actually takes place literally in my neighborhood. Literally in my neighborhood. So what happens is when you play that game, you're going to be able to go to my apartment building. Whether you can enter it or not, I don't know. But it's I'll make my own apartment my base if it's possible.
New podcast topic. What will Jonah's skeleton be doing in his apartment in The Division?
Well, here's the thing: is that you know that large building with the columns and all that stuff? That's the James A. Farling Post Office, which is a few blocks away from me. And from all the screenshots I saw, and this is a good sign, I could recognize exactly where that was in New York, including some of the stuff that was on the Lower East Side. I could tell where the FDR Drive was overhead, you know, and the general look of everything. So, yeah, I mean, when you're playing that game, if you're not from New York, trust me, it's New York. It's exactly what New York is like. I could tell where they were underneath Penn Station.
And that's impressive. I've always been kind of a sucker for people that stay close to what the thing looked like with, like, what was that game that came out a while back where you're a detective in 1940s Hollywood?
Oh, L.A. Noire.
Yeah, that was – I really dig that.
Also Mafia. I forgot the name of it. True Crime L.A. and True Crime New York were almost there. Grand Theft Auto has been really good about it in the past two games with 4 and 5 because they made – 4 may not be the same shape as New York. You know, they changed everything.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt, you know, when you were going through the Times Square style area, it felt like Times Square is for me, you know, like going through it. You know, I don't know why they felt the need. I guess it's just history, you know. Oh, we have San Andreas and Los Santos and Liberty City. Yeah. Screw those. Just make it the real location. Who's going to sue you?
Right.
Who's going to sue you for using real life locations? just. No Liberty City, make it New York. No Los Santos, make it LA. You know?
The thing that's more cool about The Division is that not only is it like staying close to that that actual location, but it's moving forward into the future and trying to figure out what it would look like if this horrible nuclear apocalypse hit. And I think that's really cool. I think that's mixing a really cool style of reality with a really cool style of fantasy.
It also makes for the easiest expansions ever. Because
right.
All you do is, okay, we're going to add the Bronx now. Okay, we're going to add Queens now. Okay, we're now going to add Staten Island. Or we're going to add a chunk of of New Jersey. Boom.
Wait. Too bad they're not going to be able to add Brooklyn because it'll be sunken into the ocean by the time that game happens.
Anyways. So yeah, The Division, I'm cautiously looking forward to it. I mean, all the buzz from it has been really positive. So we'll see. We're going to move on to the next item now. Scott, go ahead.
Okay. HTC's Vive VR Tech will launch in April, priced at $799. This is from Game Watcher. HTC announced yesterday at the Mobile World Congress event in Barcelona that its Vive virtual reality tech, powered by Steam VR, will launch in early April for $799, with pre-orders opening on the 29th of February. What comes with the $799 package? Two wireless controllers, a headset, 360-degree tracking, and room-scale movement sensors. HTC are calling the package the Consumer Edition, which also integrates phone functionality, allowing you to answer any calls without exiting the virtual world. With Vive Consumer Edition, we are now able to realize our ultimate vision, bringing Vive into homes around the globe so that people can experience immersive virtual reality in a way that fires the imagination and truly changes the world, Chair Wang, Chairwoman and CEO of HTC.
Wait, they have a chairwoman whose name is Cher?
Yep.
Either that's the actual Cher or a character from Clueless.
Who knows?
You don't have to do the rest of this. It actually makes sense, the $800 price, because it's basically what the Oculus Rift cost, which is $600. But they have a lot more crap in it. You know, they have all the room sensor stuff and the controllers and the headset and the 360 tracking and room scale and all that stuff. The thing is, I'm never going to use this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? This one is different than the Oculus Rift in that it really has you doing stuff. I mean, the Oculus Rift, you're basically just moving your head around. Mm-hmm. This one, you're moving your entire body.
It's really dawning on people just that VR is never going to be, or at least in the foreseeable future, VR is never going to be cheap.
No.
Well, I predict that in 3 years, you'll be able to pick up a VR headset for $300.
That's still kind of crazy, but yeah, I mean,
here's the thing. I was shocked to find that I could buy a 940 graphic card for under $200. I think it was like $179, and that stunned me.
Yeah. Well, technology, the price of it exponentially drops as time goes on, and I wouldn't doubt that your prediction would come true.
I mean, I bought my 4K television a couple of years ago for $600. Like, granted, it was on sale. But still, it's a 4K television, a 4K smart TV, too.
Right. And I think, what is the PlayStation version of this? I think that's
the PlayStation VR. Yeah. They're saying that that might actually be a lot cheaper. But then again, these are the same people who brought us the Eye.
Right. I think this is kind of going to be the trend we're seeing for at least another year. I don't think VR is cool. It's very cool. It's going to take off. There's no chance of it not at this point. Everyone is jumping on board, but it's not going to be practical for a while.
Here's the thing. Forgetting the cost right now, you know the kind of eye strain you're going to have. You know, I mean, you have to take these things off every so often, and you don't want to do that in a video game. Really, you don't want to have to remove it every 40 minutes because you're getting a headache.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's one of the problems of VR and 3D for that matter. So it gives you a terrible headache, and this is an even worse headache. So I don't know.
We just need to go ahead and invent the holodeck already.
Yes, HoloLens,
definitely.
We'll see. Anyways, we actually got listener feedback from the podcast for 412, the one from 2 weeks ago. Because our podcast was too late, our podcast wasn't released before you did the email. So this guy, Adamant, no, not really. So I don't know how many of you remember who Adamant was.
I do.
You know, the song Strip. It's basically what I remember from him. He said, he was answering the what is your favorite strategy game? He says, my favorite strategy game is Total Annihilation. So many units were released for that game. Skirmishes were insane, with tons of units blasting away at each other from air, land, and sky. And yes, I backed Planetary Annihilation. And I backed Planetary Annihilation. You know, I backed Planetary Annihilation. I have not played a minute of it yet. Just too much shit to play. So the question of the week is, when, if ever, will you be getting VR? So, Scott.
I'm not sure when, but I would say when it's a holodeck, I think will be when we get it. So,
you know, Derek Shamer, the original host of this show, kept on saying with 3D, no, I just want holograms. When it's holograms, let me know. How about you, TJ?
I'm in a space where I can afford it if I want to.
Can you? Oh, the other thing is that Steam has released an app on Steam, obviously. Valve has released an app on Steam that actually tests your PC to see if you can do VR on it.
Right. And what I'm saying is that I'm capable of affording like the whole setup, like actually going in on a VR-capable PC if I wanted to.
Well, you could afford it, but can you afford it?
I can. Is what I'm saying. But what I'm probably going – I'm not going to just buy it in from the get-go. I'm probably going to wait until after the Oculus Rift comes out and see what happens and see how things flow and then decide on – because people will be
getting –
there's
only one real good game for, that we know of for it anyway, and that's Eve Valkyrie. I mean, the other game they have is some stupid platformer, which looks like a watered-down version of Blinks the Cat.
They need to make something that's substantial, and then after they really take off with this stuff, when people start competing over it, when you actually start getting a console war over a VR, that's when I'll start considering going into it.
It's nice having listener feedback for the first time in a long while.
Yeah, oh, it is nice.
Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. Enjoy your feedback, so leave us a comment at our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast or the forums at gamingpodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@gamingpodcast.net. Leave us some comments on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. I am Jonah at Jonah Falcon. Alpha Shard is at Alpha Shard, or Scott is at Alpha Shard. And, TJ is at something Chugs.
You can find me on Twitter at Johnny Chugs. That's capital JOHNNY, capital CHUGS.
At some point, I'm just going to have to cut and paste that, not into the notes, but into the actual podcast article, just so that people can see it there. Anyways, yeah, I'm VR'd out. Here's the thing. How's VR going to help me play Civilization V?
Not very well. Not unless you can zoom into your cities and walk around them.
Yeah.
Yeah, Civilization, The Division.
Yeah.
You know what I really want? There was a game a long time ago called Command & Conquer... Oh, shoot, I forgot. Command & Conquer Renegade?
Oh, yeah.
In which you were actually a unit in Command & Conquer, and you were running around the area, and the multiplayer should have really taken off. It's in which someone's playing Command & Conquer, and they're telling you what to do. And you have to gather resources, just like you're inside a Command & Conquer game, you know? Mm-hmm. Someone has to resurrect that idea. I mean, we could do it now. I mean, you could have, what's it called? And it could even be a free mode in which the computer is playing an RTS against itself, and you're one of the units, and you have to carry out your missions that it tells you to do in order to complete. Oh, I better copyright that, or else someone's going to take my idea and make billions off it.
There was a mod I posted on Game Watcher a while back. It was for StarCraft II, in which you could play as several of the Marine units.
They made an MMO out of StarCraft II.
Yeah. They've done some really cool stuff in mods with that game. And I think it sort of followed that same idea, that sort of Renegade idea, but there hasn't been anything since Renegade that did that sort of thing.
Yeah, I miss Renegade. And the problem with it was really it was way ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. Way, way, way ahead of its time. So anyways, the question of the week is, when, if ever, you're going to get in VR? This podcast was really stupid and halting and not very interesting, and we hope we don't lose the 5 or 6 subscribers that we did for this one. For those of, you know, and I'm including family members in that. We might lose family members with this podcast.
Well, maybe if you stop being so pessimistic.
I wonder if that was Paul texting me back saying, no, I can't make it. Nope, he never texted back. I every so often I see if Paul wants to jump in. Wait a minute, that reminds me. When is the end of the Doctor Who season?
I thought it already did end.
Oh, well, I'm going to get on Paul on that. Okay, so anyways, we will see you next week. Hopefully we will see you next week, because we actually got some listener feedback. We'd like some more listener feedback, because it gives us more to do and talk and discuss.
Yep.
It makes me feel better about myself and keeps me away from the sleeping pills. So anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy